And now the quick pass down the middle, breaking in, and the backhand stop by Chris Mason. And Marlowe with a 2-on-1, a 3-on-1, and what a stop by Mason. Cheecher right in front, and what a stop on Ekman by Mason.
And goal, number 3, Chris Mason.
Jays, Willie, D-Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. Our video streaming is brought to you by the law offices of Amanda J. Gentry. And C-Mays joins us now, brought to you by Coleman Tractor, in Tennessee's largest Kubota dealer. C-Mays, rough one for the Predators last night. Followed the Edmonton Oilers 6-3. Leon Draisaitl with 5 points last night, 2 goals, 3 assists. He now has 10 points in the last 2 games against the Nashville Predators. What is it about Leon Draisaitl that just has the Nashville Predators number?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure every team says the same about Draisaitl and or McDavid or both guys. So it's one of those teams. I mean, you look at they played the night before against Minnesota Wild, and I was talking to their people, and they have similar issues with the Wild. They just can't, whatever the reasoning is, they just don't match up well against them. And then you knew they were going to come in with a little fire under their butts, ready to go. And you have that; those guys have that confidence right now. There was a stretch when the Preds, beat Edmonton every single time when they were young players coming into the league, and now that's obviously switched. And the difference to me in that hockey game, which was obviously Draisaitl scored that power play goal at the end of the first, and then McDavid with that one at the end of the second period, and that was enough. They had 2 shots on the power play, one shot each, and both were goals. So that was the difference in the hockey game. I thought even strength, I thought the Preds played him really well. I thought as good as they could, but you have that opportunity on the power play for the Predators, the 5-on-3, 46 seconds, I think it was, and that's a huge miss. You have to score in that situation. Your power play has been struggling, and you can only say so many times that, well, we're getting some good looks and we're getting chances, the puck has to find a way. It's got to go in. It's got to be a difference maker, and especially when you're going against the best power play in the league, and you maybe not going to win that special teams battle, but if you get that one goal, that 5-on-3, I think would have tied the game if they had scored there, and it would have been a completely different kind of situation. So, and they did a good job. They didn't take many penalties, but at the end of the day, when you do, you're playing with fire, and that was the difference to me.
Now, see, Mace, you just spoke of the power play. It wasn't good, and it hasn't been good thus far. We saw some changes within the power play unit, and that still has not worked. Now it's just a mental thing. And how do you get out of that when you know it's mental? It has nothing to do with their physical ability. Do you just continue to pound the ground and hopefully you break through, or do you continue to try to make changes as a head coach to find the right combination?
Yeah, I think you can always tweak. I think with the power play, like when you hear the coaches talk about it, and Dan Lambert said it in his second intermission interview with Kara, he said, I know it's frustrating right now, but the guys were getting chances. And if they're not getting chances, to me, that's the more concerning thing. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the goals, at the end of the day, goals have to go in. You got to score. But if they're not getting chances, that's when you really are in big, big trouble. And right now, it's a confidence thing with them. And the old cliche, you have to stick with it and not get frustrated. Don't go off the beaten path. They're doing a good job right now of getting set up. I find in games too, like the beginning of the game, their first couple power plays, usually they come out and they really create a lot and they get momentum and they don't score on it. And then it kind of falls off a little bit as the game goes on, because you kind of get that as a player, like, oh, here we go again. And then you get frustrated and you start trying to do different things. And, and that's not the recipe for success. You have to grind away and eventually, it's not like they don't have guys that haven't had success on the power play. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing. They've done it before. It's not like you have a bunch of guys that haven't done it before. You know, they're trying everything to switch up the personnel, like you said, try to find something that's going to, you know, just crack, break through and just start making a difference in the hockey game. And that's all you can do. You're not going to be able to overhaul this roster. You're not going to be able to call anybody from Milwaukee to magically help your power play. Either they figure it out or they don't. And if they don't, it's going to be a long season.
Now, because coming in the game, you had to have known, listen, Draisaitl has basically owned the Predators, for the last 10 years, 20 goals, I believe. McDavid is the best player in hockey right now. Going into, how do you contain guys like that? I mean, because there has to be a clear-cut game plan to try to take these guys out, but yet and still, these guys become main factors in them winning.
Yeah, it's the toughest challenge that any team has to, deal with when they play that team, because they're not a real deep hockey team. They've got Evander Kane who's out right now, which really added to them. I think they got a, decent second line with Nugent Hopkins, Yamamoto, and Janmark. They can create offense, but these two guys are they're the top two scoring guys in the league. You know, Connor McDavid's running away with it right now. And they play more than any other forward, so they're on for, 22 to 25 minutes a game. You have to do it by committee, and really you just have to limit them as much as you can, because it doesn't really matter what your game plan is or how you try to defend them. They're going to create offense. You obviously need your goaltender to be exceptional, and I thought Lankanen was okay yesterday. He's been very good, but that's a tall order to fill for him, and limit as much the awareness, and I think the communication, the awareness of your decisions. One goal in particular, I think it was Parson and Janot and Trennan at the time in the first period, and that's a huge assignment for these guys. That are, all right, guys, you guys got McDavid, Draisaitl, and Hyman. Go ahead, have fun. But they do a good job. It started with a defensive zone faceoff. They get the puck out of the zone, and then they turn the puck over in the neutral zone. They come back. So it's little things like that where, like, say, hey, all right, we're in the neutral zone. This puck has to go in. It's got to get deep. If it doesn't, you're playing with fire. And you just kind of got burnt on a couple things like that. But that's just the class of player that they are. You can't give them, you can't make any mistakes, because one mistake's in the back of the net. You saw the power plays. Two power plays. I'd take that every single game. You don't take two penalties, you'll take that in a game, but, they get two power plays and they're both goals.
Base, one thing that was going on last night that was pretty interesting with the matchups, as you mentioned, the 2-for-2 on the power play was killing them. In 5-on-5, they really trusted Juuso Parsonen to try to go head up with that line, which is almost an impossible thing to ask of a 21-year-old, right? But he did a reasonable job. He didn't dominate at all, but it just shows you the faith that they're putting in Parsons. And unfortunately, they're probably asking a little too much of him at this stage of his career to try to have to do that, because he's doing that not only against the Oilers, but against most teams. He's getting a tough assignment like that. So he's really getting some trial by fire here.
He's getting thrown to the wolves, but he can out well. I thought he played well, and I think, I don't know this for sure. I'll maybe ask Hines about this, but I think when you look at, matching up to DeMace's point, when to try to defend them, the best way you can defend them is to play in the offensive zone, obviously. And I think that line, I think Juuso Parsonen is really good puck protector, uses his body well. He's not one of those guys that has to get it on a stick and get it off right away. He's able to get down in the corners and protect and spend time down there. They put Sissons on that line.
Yeah, they made the adjustment. They gave him some help in the second period by putting Sissons with Parsonen on that line.
Yeah, so that's, and to me that's, you want puck possession. So if Parsonen gets kicked out of a draw, Sissons goes in and you have a centerman, and essentially you start with a puck, or depending on what side of the ice it's on, Sissons can hop in there if he's doing well in the face-off circle. And he's also a veteran guy, but you want a line that's able to spend time in the offensive zone, to try to take the puck out of their hands as much as you can, because defensively the Oilers aren't great. Their goaltenders struggled this season, so That's pretty much the only way that you defend those guys.
So, Bates, let's get to the other side of the coin. Offensively for the Predators, the guys they need to drive the offense, Forsberg, Granlund, Duchesne, who were not getting the assignment against, for the most part, the McDavid line, they were really not able to exploit the lack of depth on the Oilers. And so that's again, the concern. Those guys are getting the points here and there. Forsberg had a nice assist. Duchesne didn't have a point for the fourth straight game here. So, again, it sort of illustrates the importance of those guys being able to drive offense. And when they don't do it, whether it's on the power play or 5-on-5, you see what the result is.
Yeah, you need – those are the guys. That's why, you know, when guys are signing contracts and you pay for goals, you pay for offense. That's the offensive guys get the money, and there's a reason for it. It's not easy to do. Not everybody can do it. But when that's your role on the team – playing defensively on a team is a criteria, especially in the NHL now, especially with a team like the Predators that aren't going to be, you know, one of the higher scoring teams in the league, but you also have to contribute offensively. And I thought last season when you had Granlund, Duchesne, and Forsberg together, they were just playing so well.
No question. They drove it last year. No question. They're just not driving it this year the way they did last year. Fair to say?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And they were, you know, they would obviously get the top checking line of the other teams last season and be fine. They'd find a way to, you know, to score. And a lot of that had to do with the power play. And now it seems Hines has tried to put them together. He's tried to disperse the talent up and down the lineup. He's tried to load up two top lines. And even, you know, recently he put Granlund, Duchesne, and Forsberg back together. And it just seemed when, you know, the Blues put their top checking line against them, they couldn't generate anything. They're just having trouble. And I really, Skillsy and I, and you were talking about this yesterday, a lot of it stems to me, it's side by side, is the success of the power play bleeds over into the confidence in your 5-on-5 and in your offensive game. And right now I just think there's a lot of noise upstairs because of the lack of offense and success that they're having. So I think both of those things are really tied closely together, because you get a lot of offense on the power play. And when you're scoring on the power play, you're a few inches taller, even strength, and you have that confidence in your game. And I just think right now it's just they're just not a confident team.
C-Mace, we appreciate you. We'll chat with you next week.
All right. Thank you, guys.
All right. So Predators fall to the Edmonton Oilers 6-3. A lot of talk on the power play. And C-Mace says, hey, you know, even strength, the Predators were able to kind of stay neck and neck with the Edmonton Oilers. But at what point is that just not good enough anymore? We'll get into that coming up next. Chase Willie, D-Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game, and The Game Nashville app.
They're doing a good job right now of getting set up. I find in games, too, like the beginning of the game, their first couple power plays, usually they come out and they really create a lot and they get momentum and they don't score on it. And then it kind of falls off a little bit as the game goes on, because you kind of get that as a player, like, oh, here we go again. And then you get frustrated and you start trying to do different things, and you know, and that's not the recipe for success. You have to grind away, and eventually, it's not like they don't have guys that haven't had success on the power play. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing; they've done it before. It's not like you have a bunch of guys that haven't done it before.
There you go. That was Chris Mason on the Predators' 6-3 loss to the Edmonton Oilers last night, and that's the really puzzling thing that I want to get into. And you know, Preds 0 for 5 on the power play last night. The power play woes aren't something that's new this season. But the puzzling thing to me is these aren't some up-and-coming guys that are new to the power play. I mean, there are guys in the power play, you know, Forsberg, Granlund, Duchesne, that have had a lot of success on the power play unit in years past. So what's the problem this year? That's the golden question that I don't know if any of us have the answer to.
Yeah, it is, because you know, you look at this team and you know, over the last 2 years, 1 year they are excellent at it, and the pieces are put together, and you just think, okay, the next following year, this is going to be one of our strengths, and we just got to sort of add around it or do some things around. But we know, like the Titans coming into the season, we knew our defense was a strong point. So we assume we're good. We add to it and do some things, but we're good from a core standpoint. We're good. I think that's how they felt about the power play. That was one thing they could point to and say, okay, we're good. But for some reason, you get into the season and it's totally flipped on his head, and you're trying to figure out, well, why is that the case? It's sort of like, you know, it's Ben Simmons in a sense. How did he go from being arguably, probably the best point guard from a physical standpoint, the best point guard in the league 1 year, to not being able to, you know, throw a pebble in the ocean, you know, from anywhere, you know, yep. And you're trying to figure out, like, what went wrong? Like, this is the same guy. What went wrong that he was an all-star 1 year, and then this year it's just like, it's hard for him to do things. And that's how you sort of look at the Predators. It's from a power play standpoint, they were a good team. They were a good unit. And then all of a sudden, the next following year, no injuries, pretty much same guy, same coach, same philosophy, but they are 10 times worse than what they even thought they would be, you know, coming into the season.
Yeah, it's mystifying. It's a slump. I mean, I don't think you put it any other way. Mace talks about the mental part of it. I mm-hmm. think that's a lot of it. So let's look at the numbers. They went 1-26 to start the season.
Mm-hmm.
Then they went through a period where it wasn't bad. It was starting to come around a little bit. There were signs of life. They were getting some key ones. And now they're 0 for their last 15. Mm-hmm. And this is what I said on the post game last night. I listened to Roman Josi's interview with Kara Hammer. And Kara asked him about it. He said, look, there's no other way around it. It's killing us right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the real thing that stings is these last four games where they've been winless. Now, remember, it wasn't too far off behind, but they went 7-1-1.
Yeah.
Right? They looked like they were turning the ship around. They weren't getting a ton of goals, but they were getting a lot of positive results. And then they went on that five-day break. They've come back. They've lost four in a row. In those four games, 0-15 on the power play. And this is the frustrating thing to me, is that it's against four goalies and four teams that don't have great defense, mm-hmm. right? It's on paper teams that you should be getting well against. You should be scoring goals against. It should be the thing that's helping your power play get some life. You're scoring overall to get some life. Because the two go hand in hand. We talked about it yesterday. They're averaging 2.5 goals a game. That'll go up a little bit because they scored 3 last night, but they came into the game last night 29th in goal scoring. They've got to find a way to get more offense. So what did they do last night? They decided, look, we got to shake it up. So they again, mixed up the two power play units, and they did get a lot of shots. You know, they got set up. They got good looks. They didn't put it in.
Well,
so that's a big thing. And as May said, to me, this is the big thing. And when you don't have that belief and confidence right now, you're in a slump, does that affect other parts of your game?
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that's happening some. Right now, I just don't see the full throttle of Granlund, Forsberg, Duchesne. He moved Ryan Johansson to a different line last mm-hmm. night, tried to send a little message. Now, Johansson responded, had a goal last night. I didn't think it was his best game, but he contributed. Duchesne didn't have a real good game last night. He didn't play a whole lot in the third period, if you look at the minutes. So they're trying to push buttons with those guys to get him going. A little bit, you know, when you're a coach, you try different things. You can't just do nothing, right? You talk to him. You discuss what's going on. You say you need more. You try to do this, do that to get them started. So they're trying things. But when you play 82 games, you go through these stretches. The key is you got to come out of it somewhere in here. They've got to get some. They got to get big production from those guys.
Now, who is in control of the power play, like from a game plan standpoint, schematic standpoint?
So what they do is they have, you know, John Hines is the head coach. He will delegate different assistants to different assignments.
Mm-hmm.
And so the power play is under Dan Lambert.
Okay.
That's the assistant coach that sort of runs the X's and O part of the power play. And then if it's not working,
mm-hmm.
you know, obviously John Hines will have input, just like the head coach in any sport. Like Mike Vrabel will go in and say, okay, what do we do? We're having a problem here. Do we need to shake up personnel? Do we need to shake up our scheme? All of these things. So they've tried a lot of different things.
Well, I mean, could it be, and maybe it's not, but could it be just as simple as, you know, and you see this sometimes in sports where the voice just gets stale. You know, the players say, okay, we're doing everything that you want us to do. I know last year was last year and we had some success in it, but what we're doing now and what you're teaching us now, it's just not working. And no matter how you try to change guys, maybe the voice is getting stale. And this is a question I'm asking. Yeah. I don't know. Because you see it in other sports. And they sort of like, whether it's, you know, changing a special teams coach or changing the defense coach in basketball and making somebody else specifically, like, I just want you to concentrate on this thing. We tried it with one guy. Let you do it and see where you can go.
There was a,
and I'm not asking for anybody to get fired.
No, but it's interesting. Dan Lambert was brought in because of his expertise in the power play. Uh-huh. Because several years ago, it was a very good Predators team that wasn't clicking on the power play, mm-hmm. and Peter Laviolette took the duties. He didn't fire a coach, but he added Dan Lambert mm-hmm. specifically to sort of specialize in the power play. So that's why he was brought in to begin with. But
okay.
It's just like anything else, right? I think these are all things that come into it, right? And I think coaches have to be creative in how they continue, because it's also scouting, right? Mm-hmm. Dan Lambert came up, he sort of revamped everything on the power play last year, and all of a sudden it was a top 10 power play. But what happens? The league starts looking and says, okay, here are the five guys. This is what Nashville did. How are we going to stop that? And so now you've got to come up with that next adjustment, mm-hmm. right? And the players have to come up with the next adjustment. So it's a constant thing to stay on top. And right now they're just slumping right now. There's no question. The numbers don't lie.
And, Willie, you bring up, you know, they've been making changes in the power plays, and it's just not coming to fruition in the box score. So are there adjustments, bigger adjustments, that need to be made on the horizon? We'll get into that. Plus, your phone's coming up next, 615-737-1025. Chase, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063, The Game. And Chase, Willie, and D-Mace is presented by Hair Club. Hair Club, love your hair, live your life, creating custom hair loss solutions for men and women. Chase, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063, The Game. And hey, Preds fans, if you want to win tickets in our Lower Bowl Section 102, just text the keyword Superbook, all one word, to The Game text line 615-737-1025, and you will be entered to win. Superbook, one word. Win with 1025-1063, The Game, and you can win with Superbook. Superbook Sports, voted number one sportsbook in Vegas. Download their app today. So it's not a new thing that the Predators have been struggling on the power play. Will, you pointed out 0 for 15 on the power play in the last few games. And the Predators have tried. Switching up the power play, switching up lines, trying to just ignite something offensively. But it just hasn't come to fruition. And I think last night on display, it showed to me, my biggest takeaway was the gap in talent. So I have to ask myself, at what point is it with the Predators that you just don't have a Connor McDavid or a Leon Draisaitl, that you just don't have those elite playmakers? And that's the difference. And I understand that the Predators want to make a run for the playoffs. I understand that David Poyle's message to the media, to the fans going into this season, is we're going to do everything that we can to compete. We're going to do everything we can to get to a Stanley Cup final, to win a Stanley Cup sooner rather than later. But I'm looking at the talent deficiencies between the Edmontons of the world, the Colorados of the world, versus the Nashville Predators, and I have to ask myself, when do you just have to throw your hands up and say, we don't have enough talent on this team, so we have to do what we can to draft at the top of the draft and get some of the top talent in this upcoming draft in the next few years?
Yeah, I mean, they're about a third of the way through the season now. I do think that there's still hope that they'll get the most out of what they have. They do not have McDavid and Draisaitl. Nobody does. Now, the Oilers have their own problems, and they, for whatever reason, and the Oilers come back here again on next Monday, right? Uh-huh. So they're going to get another crack at this thing. And for some reason, the Oilers have had the Predators' numbers. There's some teams the Predators match up with very well, and mm-hmm. the other team comes at it, and Minnesota is one of them, right? Minnesota owns the Oilers. Mm-hmm. The Predators, knock on wood, have owned Minnesota the last couple of years. It's really weird. Sometimes your strengths just match up better with the other team's strengths. The Predators have some areas of their roster they're way better than the Oilers. But the Oilers, because the Predators have not been able to contain, it's one thing to give up a couple points mm-hmm. to Draisaitl and McDavid. They get a couple points every night, you know, but 5 points.
That's a lot.
Draisaitl's had 5 points in mm-hmm. each of the, it seems like, every game. He's averaging 2 goals a game over 10 games. Those guys are just breaking the game open mm-hmm. there. So that's sort of an extreme example. The Predators are built differently. who are their elite players? They got Roman Josi. Mm-hmm. They got UC Saros. They have, hopefully, enough solid players up and down to where if they play their game and play to their strengths, it's not going to be as flashy as McDavid and Draisaitl, but I think they can win their share of games. And it's, of course, as we said, when you have the goalie, mm-hmm. you can steal games. You can steal series, I think, in the playoffs, but you do have to get there. But yeah, I understand the question. I think a lot of people, Caroline, it's no secret, a lot of people are seeing the roster and wondering what's the ceiling, right? What's the maximum, and is it going to get any better in the next 2 or 3 years? That's the thing. I think right now they're pretty committed to this year of the way they've built the roster. They want to win this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think at the end of this year is probably when they have to next try to tackle the question you're asking, is do we stay along this same path, or is it time to start taking another path in some form or fashion, right? They transitioned the roster after they lost in the bubble,
mm-hmm.
right? You have 2017, they get to the cup final. 2018, they're the President's Trophy winner. They're the best record of anybody in hockey, lost in the seventh game in the second round. The next year, they still won the division, but they lost in the first round. The following year, they fired Peter Laviolette in the season.
Mm-hmm.
They went to the bubble, and they lost in the qualifying round to Arizona. That was when I think David Poile said, okay, I got to do something. I got to change the mix here. We've got to retool the roster. Since then, they have been systematically making changes. But from last year to this year, I think they felt like, hey, they added Niederreiter, they added McDonough, and so they should be better than they were last year.
But they haven't been.
No, they haven't been better than they were last year. And they'd be the first to admit that. And part of it is they're, you know, it's really comes back to scoring in a lot of ways. But we're only a third of the way through the season here. You still got a lot of hockey to be played.
Mm-hmm.
But I come back. I always say this almost before the season starts. When people ask me how the Predators are going to do, I said, tell me at the end of the year how Johansson, mm-hmm. Forsberg, Duchesne, Josi, you know, just start with your top guys. Tell me what kind of seasons they have, and then I'll tell you how they did. They can't win if the guys they pay $8 million, $9 million to, if those guys don't do anything, it's really hard to win. I don't care who the coach is. I don't care who the goalie is. You've got to have your top guys carry the load. Now, you can go through some slumps, which is what they're in right now. Duchesne, mm-hmm. Forsberg.
They've been in a long one.
Yeah, I mean, they've had their moments, but they have not had the consistent drive that they had for the most part last year. And I'm not saying you got to have a certain amount of goals. It's, are you helping your team win? Are you a big reason your team is winning each
night?
Or
are you a big team? Or team losing?
Right. That's it. But I mean, let's be blunt about it. Last night, those guys got outplayed by the Oilers' top players.
But they it's not like they don't have the guys. I would consider, you know, Josi an elite player.
Absolutely, and he's having a good year.
Exactly, I would consider Matt Duchesne a really good player. Johansson, a really good player. They don't have a McDavid. Or
right.
a dry
they're
side.
They're not in the same
but
class.
They do have an elite player. I do believe they do have an elite goalie, but they have a bunch of good players to really good players around them. So why haven't they figured this out? Why haven't they been better than what they've shown? Because it's not like, you know, we're looking at a team and, you know, they have one guy in Josi and then they have Josi. That's it. So we can understand the struggles then. But they have guys that have proven they can score and score a lot of goals in this league.
They just haven't done it
exactly.
This season. Coming up next, Mike Vrabel hit the podium previewing the Titans' road trip to L.A. Take on the Chargers. We'll get into that coming up next. Chase, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. We'll head to St. Thomas Sports Park where Mike Vrabel is at the podium.
After you come out of the locker room.
Well, all the fundamentals that we talk about, I think that, you know, understanding that you know, we're just going to have to make sure that we get into drives, you know, and just unfortunately recently the case has been just some self-inflicted wounds. And, you know, I thought we answered, again, we've been through this, I thought we answered well last week, unfortunate. You know, that we weren't able to answer when our defense needed us. You know, going back to the fundamentals, taking care of the football, you know, really just striving to keep this rhythm and the flow that's been there, you know, at times. And again, not having this roller coaster of having a good drive or then doing something, you know, that you know, affects that, and then really letting it affect the rest of the game. You know, they're going to make some plays. They're going to get some stops. You know, we have to go right back out whenever we get the ball and get back and find that rhythm.
How does Eckler's ability to catch passes sideline to sideline stress your defense?
It's just, you know, they do a lot with him, and he's just an ultimate outlet. It seems like when he needs to sit down in the zone, he's sitting down. When he needs to continue to run, he continues to stay on the move. The quarterback knows where he is. You know, they have a lot that's designed for him, but they are also a lot that is just, you know, the relief and the outlet and the check down. And, you know, he does a fantastic job with the plays that are designed for him, as well as the ones that, you know, get to him after the quarterback's progressed.
How much is their size and strength at the receiver position, even tight end, challenge guys in the secondary?
Well, I think they have some guys with different skill sets, and certainly they do have a stature. You know, I think obviously with Williams, Keenan Allen, you know, Palmer, you know, Carter's, you know, a guy that can kind of, you know, play a lot of different roles. He's not just a gadget guy, a guy that runs, you know, multitude of routes. It seems like, you know, Everett's been factoring and really gaining a lot of confidence.
Getting back to some of those self-inflicted wounds, false starts. Obviously, there's different ones, but false starts with the offensive line. Like, what are you guys doing to get better in that department and just get that
offensive
line?
You know what I mean? Tell Nick to wait for the ball to snap. I mean, I think Nick's leading the league. So, focusing. You know, again, it's not always and it's not just Nick. I just know that he's got the majority of them, I think. You know, sometimes in our zest to get them, we get ourselves. We've been okay, I would say, trying to handle the road environment, which is crazy. You know, when we're on a silent, I think we're locked in. And so sometimes when Ryan, you know, has a voice inflection or things happen, you know, just have to make sure that we're focused in and, you know, we continue to practice those things. We work on a cadence when we condition, when we run. You'll see us do that again today. We echo the call, ask them to do all that, reminders. If the, you know, sometimes the cadence changes at the line of scrimmage, we ask those guys from inside out to echo that, you know, just a lot of different things.
You've been a big a proponent of attention to detail in terms of making sure that guys know exactly what to do. Has there been any drop off in that in recent weeks as you've gone through this little rough patch?
Well, I mean, I think you look at all those things, and you know, whether it, you know, that's tied into performance, you know, different parts. I mean, I don't think we've had, you know, busts. I don't think there have been a lot of egregious busts. But I do think that the details can always improve. We try to ask them to work through those things at each and every position, what they may be. I think they can always be better. I think understanding, you know, what they're in, what we're in, and trying to improve that way, and how your job may change based on the look that they give us, or the coverage that they're in, or the formation that they're in offensively.
It's pretty good success going out west since you've been here. Do you change anything during the week as far as schedules or travel or anything like that, or do you just kind of do your best to ignore
Try to just show up and play well, you know, coach well. I mean, we went out early, I think, in Seattle. I don't think we'll do that now. It's a little longer flight to Seattle. We'll try to leave normal time, try to get in, you know, what would be 4:30 or 5, I think, try to stay consistent to whatever time zone that we're on, get some rest and get up and, you know, treat it like a 3:25 game.
Did that bother you as a player at all, or, you know, did you find you had to adjust as a player when you went out?
I mean, we had the double week one time where we stayed out there because we had two games out there back-to-back. But other than that, I don't really recall having it be too much of an issue.
Watching Staley's teams this year, he's shown propensity to be kind of a go-for-it guy. I think in some fourth-down situations, does that change how you prepare?
Well, I think we always have to be kind of aware, especially, you know, you get around the 50-yard line or, you know, you're inside the five. You know, they had Miami third and 21, whatever it was, third and goal from the 21, and they got it down to the one-yard line on a screen. You know, they went for it. A very similar situation to us. They scored right before half, and, you know, give them a lot of credit for executing that situation and getting down there and going for it and scoring. So, you know, when you get past the 50 and you're in that fringe field goal range, you know, there's a propensity that we have to be ready to defend, you know, two downs. And you know, we've had other, you know, teams with that philosophy as well. That seems to be the kind of the trend.
What's the Treylon's status in the protocol?
Still in protocol.
What's the key for
I don't. There's only two. Yeah, it's either in or you're out. You know what I mean? And I can't really comment on, you know, where he's at other than still in.
Is he in the light practice?
No, there's just still the in the protocol or out of protocol.
Troy Avery's still in the same situation.
Still in protocol.
What's the key for a guy coming up in reserve to be able to kind of hit the ground running and be successful? And how much you're hoping maybe that kind of game could do that for you this week?
Well, I think that starts with, one, their effort, you know, the individual player's effort. To get back, to work hard, to be engaged in the rehab, to strain through that process. And then once we feel like he gets close, we enter him back into meetings. You know, they're on a different schedule when they're not in that meetings, when they're, you know, still 3 weeks away or 4 weeks away. Then they start, you know, then the work that they do with Frank and Brian Bell. You know, I think B. Bell does a fantastic job with that return to play before they get onto the practice field. He tries to meet and understand what he's going to have to do, what that player's going to have to do. He meets with our coaches about drills that they may have to do once they're back and movements. So then they work there. And then we, you know, when the window opens up, then we make a decision and they start to practice. So I think conditioning is a large part of it as well. We talked about that last week with Racy. And Josh, both those players did really well on their return. So, you know, we'll see where Zach is.
With the limit on IR recalls and Ola's ultimate fate, is that one that maybe you'd like to have back?
No.
With these final four games, and you mentioned wanting to roll into the playoffs, you know, on a high note, what is it about this group of guys that you feel, you know, gives you the confidence that you guys could do that?
Well, I just enjoy the way they come to work. You know, I think we're all disappointed Monday. The volume, again, around the building on Tuesday, of guys came in to work and, you know, lift or get treatment, check in with their coaches, whatever they had to do or wanted to do. And then I think the way that we started Wednesday and started today, you know, start the process over. And, you know, that's twofold. That goes for me, the coaches, you know, the players. You know, there's long days after you lose, and you got to try to get back going. And I think the biggest thing for me is when the players are here.
With Herbert's arm, his arm strength, is he a guy that when he extends the plays to that he'll put a ball in places maybe that a lot of other guys wouldn't try? And how much do you have to guard against that?
I mean, I don't really, you know, I mean, I think the arm talent is fantastic. I think the ability to move and extend plays. You know, I saw a stat where he, I think, had the most yardage outside the pocket the other night than any quarterback in the league. I think he had 150 yards outside the pocket, whether that's design plays for him to get out there or he's getting out there himself on third down, looking to throw but can run, can, you know, put it anywhere. So puts a lot of stress on you as guys start to uncover, whether that's out in the field or in the red zone.
Like you know, your coaches say, that you know, it's easier to teach lessons when you're winning. When you're losing, do you find yourself being more positive, I guess, to try to get it turned around?
Well, I mean, I think that we all understand. You know, I mean, it's professional football, and I think you have to be consistent. You know, I try to coach the action and not the result. I really do. Whether we win or we lose, I try to coach things that come up in the game that have to be improved. Things that I recognize that we did well. You know, and I think by what I mean is, you know, if you give up contain or something and you make a play, you still have to recognize, say, hey, you know, the next time that's going to be a huge, huge gain. That quarterback that can scramble is going to be out of there. There's an element to, yeah, making a play, but, you know, sometimes just because the play was favorable, you may have not necessarily done your job. And so I try to use those examples to them and saying, you know, whether we win or lose, there's going to be things that we're going to have to improve, and then the things that we have to eliminate, such as the turnovers or the, you know, the poor situational football at the end of the half, you know, not affecting the quarterback, things that we know will get us beat.
You know, potential return mean to you guys, especially given the experience at that position there?
You know, Zach's played a lot of football and he's done some good things for us, and we'll just try to get him back and see how he does and progresses through the week at practice.
All right, coming up next, Jonathan Hutton, Outkick 360, will join us, breaking down what Mike Vrabel had to say at the podium. Plus, Titans on a 3-game losing streak. What's the outlook at this point? We'll get into that coming up next. Chase, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. And hey, tune into this Sunday's NFL Game of the Week on 94.9 The Fan. This week's game will feature the Dallas Cowboys against the Jacksonville Jaguars at noon. NFL Game of the Week brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue and Superbook Sports, voted number one sportsbook in Vegas. Download their app today.